Hey, Bob WP here, and welcome to Woo Biz Chat, a Do the Woo podcast show. Woo! Woo! We would like to thank our sponsor, GoDaddy. Build your client sites using the flexibility of a managed WooCommerce store from GoDaddy. If your clients are looking to expand their store, you can deliver them a fully customized WooCommerce site. Tell you more about GoDaddy later in the show, but let's get into the conversation.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Woo Biz Chat, where we dive into the business side of WooCommerce and WordPress. I'm Emma. I'm here with my co-host, Adam. And today we're going to be talking about something that every plugin and SaaS business owner kind of struggles with, is making the right decision at every stage of growth.
Oh, decision-making fatigue. Hi. Yes, this is Adam. Yeah, decisions are not easy. And the quick thing before I get started in our interview, we are the accumulation of the choices and decisions we make. And I used to be a teacher, and I would talk to like high school, like seniors. And this is this joke, like when they were leaving the door, like, all right, guys, make good choices. And oh, Mr. Weeks, you know, I got that groan and stuff. But you wouldn't imagine like how many times make good choices made it to like graduation speeches and things, because we are the accumulation of the choices, the decisions we make. And in business, it's no different. So today we have Nathan Tyler. You are here to join us to help us discuss and dive into this topic of decision making. Nathan, would you real quick just sort of introduce yourself and kind of your relevance and, you know, into this WooCommerce, WordPress. What you doing here?
What are y'all doing here?
I don't know.
Let's go.
Defend yourself. So, yeah, I've been in the WordPress space for a while. I started out doing freelance work in like 2004, 2005, and was doing really early WordPress days. I was building web applications in other frameworks, and then I started bumping into WordPress more and moved to a point where I was just building all of my sites for clients in WordPress. So I ran an agency primarily from 2004 through 2014, 2019 in various different iterations. So I built a lot of WordPress sites, a lot of WooCommerce, and then later I've kind of transitioned to software products, so WordPress plugins and SaaS businesses. So I've kind of run the gamut of being on the services side and on the product side.
So it sounds like, well, I mean, I've also done a lot of research, but you've built multiple businesses, built multiple products. And like, I think I maybe want to start with more of like a broad, almost even generic question. But what would you say is like the hardest decision you've had to make when like in growing these businesses? Let's go specific, growing the businesses.
They're also different. I think the hardest decision was really starting. Like, I think when you're doing client services, and then if you want to switch to products, it's incredibly difficult because the business models and all the economics are flipped, and it almost never makes sense to actually invest time in this thing that may or may not work. And if it works, it'll only start paying off years later, really. Like, I could just take a client project tomorrow and get X number of dollars for sure, as opposed to maybe I could sell this plugin for $49 a year and a bunch of them if people actually care and find it and I build the right thing. So that it is pretty hard to pull the trigger and actually start and stick with it throughout.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. The getting started is definitely one of the most important, most difficult decisions that any entrepreneur makes as they're getting going, because you're right. I've got this safe thing. I may not like it, but it's paying the bills. Often that's what happens. I'm going to jump in to do something else that's scarier. Could you give us sort of a brief overview of the different businesses that you have started in this space, like the problems that you've been solving? So just, yeah, kind of a brief overview.
Sure. So I built several plugins that went nowhere, little add-ons for different Gravity Forms and like different little add-ons that I thought would work that did not. And then the first one that did work, my now co-founder, Natalie McLeese, we were both running web agencies. We were both burned out and frustrated with that grind. And we decided we both had a lot of things going on, but we would just carve out 4 hours a week. We went to the Coffee Bean, and we sat at the table and we worked on our plugin there together, which was also like a test to see whether we really liked each other. And you know, we didn't trust each other to come to each other's house. So it was, you know, meeting on neutral ground, safe. But we decided we'll work on the plugin while we're there. And then outside, we'll do all of the other stuff that we're juggling. So we would meet there and work on it. And so we built Draw Attention, which was our first plugin. So it's like interactive images. Both of us had kind of run into client projects where they needed some kind of map or interactive thing where you kind of draw something that you want to highlight and you roll over and get more information. So we decided that was a small enough plugin that we could take on, and we'd kind of done the work and it was a test for ourselves. And that we put the free version out in the directory, and then we started getting upsells into the pro version. I would say we probably built the initial version of that in maybe 6 months. And over the next year or two, we kind of went from 4 hours a week to 8 hours a week. And then we built Simply Schedule Appointments, which was the next plugin. We decided we did like each other and we did need to build a product that had the chance of being large enough that we could actually shift more of our time or eventually build a team around. So we went for appointment scheduling because everybody that we knew was using Calendly embedded on their site. And at that time, especially, it was particularly bad. There's like little weird scroll bars and it was a very clunky experience. We were using Calendly, which is a great product, but it just wasn't very integrated into WordPress. And so we thought, well, we could build something as good as that in WordPress and like play nicely and integrate with Gravity Forms and like page builders and all the ecosystem. So we started with Draw Attention, went to Simply Schedule Appointments. I had also built, kind of overlapping that, I built Staging Pilot, which was automated updates for WordPress. So it was a SaaS platform and Pantheon acquired it in 2019. And that was really the moment that allowed me to stop the services and agency work. And actually, as I left Pantheon, then I was able to fully switch into product mode. And since then, we've built up Aardvark, which is an accessibility SaaS platform, and then BlinkMetrics, which is helping small businesses know how to keep their eye on all the different pieces of their business. We're all juggling 50 SaaS apps and logins and reports. And if you ask any business owner, how is your business going? They're going to open up 50 tabs, or they'll reach some breaking point where to get control of it, they're going to have a spreadsheet that they copy paste numbers once a month into to try to keep their eye on all the different parts of the business. And so we automate that. Like, we can replace that spreadsheet. We can automate it every day. We can pull it from the 50 SaaS apps and WordPress and, you know, WooCommerce and Google Analytics and all the different places we can pull that from. So I guess a number of different things before that was helpful.
Yeah, definitely. I was taking notes because I think with your answer, and now I have like 50 new questions. I'm like, oh, I got to remember this one. I've got to remember this one. But now I don't know where to start. I guess, no, I want to jump into pricing. So you asked questions before that. Oh, okay.
Well, so I've got a question on pricing.
Okay. And then I'll ask 70 questions on pricing.
70 round questions. Okay. So we have this context. You've started a lot of different businesses in WordPress to solve different problems. You saw gaps in the market. So now it's time you started the business thinking about pricing. Pricing is this thing that I think a lot of people have blinders on. They don't know exactly what to do, when to raise prices. Here in the US, the price of eggs just went crazy high. And so every Waffle House has like raised their egg price by like 50 cents. Like if you're going to buy egg, like if you're going to order something with eggs at a Waffle House, it's now 50 cents more. People are upset about that. Like, don't raise the price of this. How do you not upset customers? How do you make a profit? How do you think about pricing?
I think raising prices on customers is always tricky. I think in general, if you can afford to, there's certain points where you just absolutely have to because your raw costs are increasing. But especially in WordPress world, that's not typically the case. Like typically right. All the server load and everything is absorbed by the customer. So, you know, my general approach has been like, let existing customers stay at the price that they signed up at, especially if you have recurring subscriptions on. You can basically say the subscription is locked in at that price, and then if they cancel their license at any point, then of course they're going to have to come back and buy the new price.
You're building trust.
Yeah.
Have you ever had to raise prices? And then like, how were you able to like communicate that? And did you get any backlash on it?
Yeah. So, I mean, typically we're just raising prices like for new customers. So I think draw attention, we started in 2014 and it was $49, I think. And then we went for a single site. And then at some point we increased it to 74. For whatever reason, we decided to add $25 to it. And then it went to 99. I think that's where it's at now. So we just did that like every 3 years, 4 years, we kind of did that. We also used to offer a discount for the renewal, which was very common in WordPress. I think WordPress in general has gone through a transition of like not automated renewals and discounts at renewals to getting rid of the discount to turning on recurring subscriptions. And now common plays like first year is discounted and then later years increase. So, I mean, I think the whole industry has kind of shifted within WordPress to work a little bit more like that. We don't increase the price on the second year. We haven't gone that far, but we do. Like we have just increased our price a couple times. You experiment with something and it was too high. And then you kind of walk it back down. But I think we've only had to do that like one time. In general, we probably wait too long to the point where it's like, we haven't raised the price on this thing in 5 years. And I don't know if anybody's noticed, the economy has definitely changed in the last 5 years.
So how do you go about deciding like the initial price point? Do you do much competitor research? Is there a strategy to it? Or do you just kind of look at, like you were saying, like the raw, I don't remember the words that you used, but, and then just do something a little bit higher so you get a little bit of revenue?
I think it's been a little different with each product. So with Draw Attention, it's a very like niche plugin. It doesn't have a ton of competition. Like typically you just won't bother doing it or you'll use some other tool that you embed. Like there's not much within WordPress. So I think we were just trying to figure out what would be the minimum that makes sense to even have a plugin. Like I don't think you should sell a plugin for $19 because you can't, the moment you answer a support ticket, and if you're paying somebody, you've basically lost the money already. So I think we chose $49 just as a floor, and then we doubled it. I think it was $99 for unlimited sites or something. There wasn't much thought in it. It was mostly just a test all across the board.
This is what we think. Comparison of other like similar valued plugins or something.
Yeah. With Simply Schedule Appointments, is definitely more of a direct, like Calendly literally was like $8 a month. So we decided very early on, like $99 should be our entry price point, and that's still the price point today. I think it's kind of anchored. The market is anchored there. If we can say, hey, like if you're on a WordPress site, it's better than Calendly, like it integrates with your Gravity form, you can use conditional logic, like it knows whether you're logged in, like it's integrated like very nicely, and you can grow into the other features if you have your whole team on there. Like we're definitely cheaper than Calendly, but that basic entry point, it kind of had to be $99. And then usually you kind of want three tiers and you want them to be like the next one is like double and then the next one is like five times the base. And then you kind of have to figure out what makes sense to put in there.
Right.
Sorry. I was like, me again. Okay. So like you said, you pick me because you guys can see me now. Okay. You said like, I was going to ask something similar with like, there's like free pro and I was going to ask how many tiers, but then you just said you should generally have three tiers. Is that like common knowledge?
I think within pricing strategy, people want some choices and like people converge to the middle one in general because they don't want, you know, nobody thinks they have the most advanced needs, but they don't want to get the most basic thing either. So I think it does give them choices. And I think even more important than your pricing like points is how you package the features. Like a lot of times they're trying to decide what goes where. We have come up, especially in the WordPress world where the free version is so overwhelmingly predominant, like 90% of your users are free. Like if it's going to cause lots of support, it doesn't go in free, it gets pulled out into the higher tier. So I think in WordPress specifically, it's just a practicality that you need to move some of the trickier features up into higher tiers.
Yeah, I think you know, one of the things I've thought about with pricing is there's this value proposition of what does your plugin, how much are people dependent on it? And sometimes I think plugins can price themselves lower because they want to be competitive or what's it really worth. But if someone's entire business is dependent on that one plugin, there is this perception of, oh, if it's cheap, it's not very good. And our entire business is running off of this inexpensive thing. So, well, they're not ready for a larger client. We can't depend on there. Is that part of your equation at all?
Maybe. I think if somebody's going to pull out their credit card and type it into your website, like, it very rarely matters whether it's like $49 a year or $79 a year. Like, mm-hmm. if it's even $10, like, they're going to have to think about it. And then they're going to expect the world once they've, you know, paid it, regardless of what the price is. So I think often people will price too low. They focus too much on the competition and will try to, like, that's not really how people make decisions, right? They basically, if they end up at your site, they're like, is this going to solve my problem? And if it does, is it worth this? And like, there's often not a lot of price comparison shopping. And a lot of people will, they think they're really selling the technology, like the plugin. But we've always really emphasized like user experience and customer support. And we have always hired and prioritized support. Our support team will, you know, respond within a couple hours. They'll actually read your ticket. They'll even write little custom CSS snippets for you. In some circumstances, they'll even get on a Zoom call with a client and like share their screen and like go through, which is all like very costly. And you need to make sure that you can afford to do that. But really, like, these people, like, your plugin, your product is like a tiny bit of somebody's life, and they don't even want it to be part of, they just want their problem solved, right? Like, they just want their appointments to get scheduled and moved on with their day. And so if we can price to help them solve the problem, whether that's through brute force of support or handholding or documentation or all of those things, that's going to matter. It's not going to matter whether it's $99 or $49 or...
I like that. Do you have any preference, or I guess not preference, but like lifetime deals versus subscriptions? When is the right choice for one or the other?
Yeah. I think always subscriptions, because the business, it's not very sustainable for the business to go all off of lifetime deals. That said, there are different people who seek out lifetime deals, and they'll kind of only buy them because everybody's so fatigued with subscriptions. So we offer them when people email in, because you'll hear from them. They'll say, where's your lifetime deal? How much is a lifetime? And then you're like, great, here we go. Here's the page, right? And you offer it. But we don't advertise it, but it's there for the people that ask. And that seemed to have worked pretty well for us.
God, the hidden secret lifetime. I did not know that was a thing. Now I'm going to...
A little insider tip.
So pricing is this interesting thing. Thanks for kind of sharing that. Obviously, we're in the business of WordPress and WooCommerce to make money. So that you're trying to find what is that level that I can get it, you know, get that price up to, so we can turn a profit, this is not a charity, without losing customers. And so I think how you're describing that is helpful.
Whether you're just starting to build that Woo shop for a client or looking to expand or scale an existing site, GoDaddy's e-commerce hosting solution is there for you and your projects. Expand a client store with access to thousands of extensions, or scale big time with conversion tools, multiple staff accounts, an integrated POS, marketplace integrations, and discounted shipping rates, plus a lot more. And if you continue to manage your site or you hand it over to the client, a single dashboard gives powerful tools such as online sales tracking and easy auto sync for all the store's inventory across the entire site. Plus, software, plugins, and extensions will be kept up to date, and regression and other testing is done continually to avoid site breakage. With that all said, keep your client sites humming along with e-commerce hosting from GoDaddy at GoDaddy.com.
So Nathan, I saw a YouTube video. You recently celebrated 10 years of having a partner. Walk me through the strategy or the benefits, some of the pros and cons of choosing to go solopreneur or going in, with a partner. How did you decide, nope, I can't do this on my own?
Well, I think a partnership is way better if it's the right partner. And if it's not, it's 1,000 times worse. And so that's really the trick to it. Both of us had some bad situations in the past where we'd taken on a partnership and we were doing most of the work, and both of us had friendships that deteriorated as a result. And so I think going into with a very close friendship is risky, and there's a lot more dynamics. Natalie and I had met at WordPress meetups and events, so we like knew each other. She had organized WordCamp LA 1 year, and I was a co-organizer. It's like we had experienced each other, and we were friends, but not like close friends. So we didn't have like a ton to lose. And we also went into it eyes open, both of us having had bad experiences, and say, okay, let's just start very simple. And so we're definitely, everything's fair and nobody's feeling slighted. We're going to just meet at this coffee bean. We'll work for this time, and there's no expectations outside of it. And so we built up very slowly. I've done both, and I would say it's infinitely better with a partner. Like, I think one of the hardest things of running your own business is there's no downtime or vacation time or that you don't pay for on the other side, right? Like, you come back to a completely overloaded inbox or something blows up and you have to deal with it. And being able to actually step away and have somebody who does take it, like, that's huge. Like, I'd never had that in the 10 years I was going solo. And I would say that would be worth it. Also, just the ability, if you have a 50-50 partner, to be able to just have somebody who has all the context of your business and all of the same incentives as you. Like, it's so nice to be able to talk to somebody very completely openly at all stages. And sometimes that person ends up being your spouse in a solo thing, and that's taxing on the spouse and stressful, and they don't have the context, and you have to explain all this stuff. And I think it's really healthy to have a partner if you can find the right one.
Absolutely.
So like you, I feel like you got quite lucky with Natalie. You said like, you know, you go 4 hours to a coffee bean, you bond over a packet of spilled sugar. But what if you're like online with somebody? How then do you kind of divide up the responsibilities and make sure that you're aligned and have as much context outside of those 4 hours? I feel like the 4 hours would extend so much more time if you're wanting to go forward with somebody, not in person.
Yeah, I think you just have to figure out what your boundaries are or expectations and be clear about them. I mean, you can meet in Zoom, as we did many times in 2020. And these days, Natalie and I always, we live 5 miles apart and we see each other once a quarter, but that's only because we purposely get together. Everything's on Zoom and Slack now anyway. It can be done remotely too. I think just, it's really easy to get excited about everything you could do and how far it could go and everything you're going to build together. And then it's really easy for somebody to get overwhelmed in the day-to-day and not be pulling their weight, and then people feel frustrated. So
yeah, I think that was really smart to say when you're starting out, especially learning how you each work, and because that we'll do 4 hours outside of it, your time is yours. I have no expectations of you, especially with it kind of 50-50, because that there is this thing is that it's almost never equal. Like, you'd never like, and we often just as humans, we overvalue the thing that we do. Like, I did this thing and they didn't do as much, but, and they're thinking the exact opposite. I think that was, I'd love to kind of think more about partnerships and how you came together and doing things equal. Cause it's not, you're not meeting at the coffee bean anymore. How did it evolve after that 4 hour agreement?
Yeah. We went to twice a week, 4 hours. And then we went to 8 hours. And then we're like, this is a really long time to be sitting in coffee bean. We've seen 3 shift changes. Like, do you want to, like, I have an extra desk in my office. Should we go to each other's house? Oh, okay. So yeah, it evolved very slowly. We were not full-time in the business until like 7 years into our 10-year. We actually had hired support people before we were even full-time in the business. So we've only been full-time for like 3 years, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah. So very slowly. But we both had agencies and things winding down, and I had the SaaS business and then the acquisition. So we both had a lot of different things going on and then we finally said, okay, we're ready. Yeah.
Nice. I feel like Adam's asking all of these questions because we don't have 4 hours and a coffee bean together. But okay, so I think maybe just to sum up this last co-founder relationship managing thing, Like, is there anything you would have done different, or like one piece of advice that you would give to somebody that's trying to take this next step? And besides everything that you just said, because those were also very good tips.
And I think just trying to find somebody who has a similar like worldview and work ethic to yourself is like more important than I think the skill. Like a lot of times I think you're looking for like a complementary skill set, which is certainly super helpful, especially at the beginning. But I think how you deal with stress, how you approach really difficult situations, like that ends up being more important. And the skills will shift, right? Like when we met, we had perfectly complementary like front end and back end. Like I'm databases and APIs and architecture, and Natalie was front end and JavaScript and user experience and graphic design. And so it was like this perfect fit, like all of our plugins, like she wrote all the front end code, I wrote all the back end code. But like for the last 3 years, none of it, we don't write any code, right? Like we're just managing and doing lead development kind of roles and code reviews and stuff. But a lot now is HR, and she will do a lot of the HR and legal and different things. And like our roles have shifted drastically. And so we needed that at the beginning, that complementary thing to get the first products built without hiring people. But over time, like now we're stuck with each other as 50-50 partners, and we're not using any of those skills. So I think it's really easy to be like, oh, I need this person to fill this gap that I can't do. And that's like the only reason that you're together, but you don't actually like just get each other, or you may not have the same goals about what you want to do with the business. I think a piece of advice would be like, what do you want to do in 10 years? Which is like really hard to imagine, but do you want to build this company and flip it and sell it to a hosting company? Do you want to be running this business and doing the work? Like, do you want like those kind of like big goal? Like the goals matter a lot, and then you can figure out the rest. But
that's such a good point.
Yeah. So I think we've gotten some good value out of how you're talking about partnership versus no partnership. And if you're going to do a partnership, go slowly, incrementally, how you kind of matching each other. Those are some really good. So thank you for that. I want to kind of shift to this idea that a lot of people in this space, entrepreneurs in this space, wrestle with of plugins versus a SaaS. And you have been in this unique position of, you know, both of these. How do you choose one over the other? Is it product dependent? Is it, this is what the solution is, so it's better suited as a plugin or as a SaaS? How do you think about?
Yeah, I think sometimes the problem itself warrants it. Like Link Metrics, the platform that we're building now, like we're integrating with 50 different SaaS tools that you use every day. We're pulling in data. We're aggregating data in a data warehouse. We're reporting on like gigabytes or terabytes of data and automate it. So when there's intense server resources or something like that, like I wouldn't possibly do that as a WordPress plugin, because people are running on $2.99 a month hosting, and like none of that will work. And there's authentication keys and approval processes, and it would not work at all as a plugin. We have a plugin that's like a connector to the SaaS, so you can expose all your WordPress data and WooCommerce data. But I mean, there's some solutions like that really dictate it. And then there's some where you have a choice. And I think it's just a different landscape of competition, right? Like with, there would make no sense for me, Calendly is a great product. Like it makes no sense for me to compete with Calendly and Acuity that are great SaaS products that have venture backing, and you know, they can do all the marketing channels that we can't afford to. But if I take that same thing and put it in WordPress, now it has, if it's Calendly versus Simply Schedule Appointments in WordPress, if you're a WordPress site, it's better. But I think there's actually no market. Like I wouldn't, there's a million scheduling tools. I wouldn't build it as a SaaS. So there's more work for a SaaS too. It's to get to the basic starting line of like, you have to be running servers. You have to have logins. You need to have your email deliverability. You need to have like monitoring and kind of some DevOps stuff. You need to have backups because all of your customer data is your responsibility. Performance, it's harder performance-wise because you could have 1,000 customers all logged into your SaaS application, and that's a lot of server load, versus if you have 1,000 WordPress customers, they all have their own little micro installs, and it doesn't, you don't, other than your e-commerce store having to be able to take the money and give them the file, you don't actually have that kind of real-time responsibility. If your website goes down, that just means somebody can't purchase it. It doesn't mean that you've caused downtime for all your customers.
Yeah. I just see both mine and Adam's eyes like going like like zoning out like, oh shit, well, I guess we're never making SaaS product.
That's a lot of work.
It's so much harder.
To plugins.
Well, you've talked to me out of it. I had so many other questions to help you decide, but I already know my decision. Yeah.
Well, you can. I mean, you can hire a developer. These aren't unsolvable problems. It's just that it's more upfront work and responsibility, right? And you have to build more of the basics. Like with a WordPress plugin, you already have all the infrastructure of WordPress. So you can say, oh, I just want like this little post type and I need to build my functionality in there. But with a SaaS, like you have to build a sign up and a login system and credit card processing and like all that stuff. Like you need to have an account center, manage my account, all that stuff, just basic plumbing. And there's shortcuts and there's templates and there's ways to get started, but it's just a lot more work before you even get to the interesting part that the people are buying. There's just a lot of plumbing and infrastructure.
So actually you made a good point. Like the interesting part, I'm kind of moving away from SaaS now. The interesting part about, you know,
it's great. I didn't mean to scare you guys.
It's great if we have your brain. No, and other people's brains that I have. I have no plans to create a plugin or SaaS product anytime soon.
I have no plan to take brains.
No, I can organic market the crap out of it, though. But you're saying, yeah, like the part where people start buying is kind of like where it gets a little fun and a little bit, well, not that the other part isn't fun. But so like, I guess specifically like your scheduling plugin, there, like you said, there's a lot of them. They're everywhere. So how did you go about making sure that Simply Schedule Appointment stands out? And I say this because I work very closely with Hosting Your Tutorials and we tested it. And even though it is on the pricier side, it's like number three on our list, which the first two are a much cheaper, you know, like for because we're targeting more like small business owners. But it was like, actually, this is pretty, you know, this is pretty good. You know, we'll put the price there and people can make their own decisions.
I'll put that right on the homepage. This is actually pretty good.
This is pretty good. You know, like it's simple, but satisfying and all the features are very easy to use. Like, you know, everybody says that it's very easy to use, but like maybe like how did you guys go about making sure or how you guys got the Simply Schedule Appointments to stand out? Because when you type in on plugins like a calendar, there's just pages and pages of them.
Yeah. When we started, there was already like 10, 15, 20 other plugins that did it. But we looked at every person we knew, including ourselves, and everybody was using Calendly embedded on the site. So we knew that obviously they weren't good enough, like, or they're very clunky, or we did an audit of all the different ones that were there. And this is like 8 years ago, so I'm sure it's all different. But, you know, it was very weird experiences, and you had to, it was like clearly built by developers. It was like, I, Nathan, want to schedule an appointment. So I need to create a business. And I need to create a location and I need to create an employee. And I need to like set up all of these different things because that's the boxes that it needed checked internally. And so there's no focus on the user experience. I mean, it was a technical problem and it technically worked, but it put all the work on the user during the setup. So we put a lot of work. And one of the first things we built was the onboarding wizards, like really trying to get to a point where anybody can install the plugin and take their first appointment within 5 minutes, like actually 5 minutes, not you know, a 2x speed run demo by somebody who's done it 10,000 times. And Natalie's experience in user experience and design was a huge part of that. Like she spent a lot of time doing that. Also, she's been in the accessibility world for a long time. So she made sure that every part of the product is like WCAG AA compliant. And that has recently been a differentiator for us that people are looking for with all the recent accessibility stuff.
Nice. Yeah, this has been like really helpful because I think what we've done on this conversation is get into some of these big decision-making things that you have done. You have now built some very successful tools. Lots and lots of people are using the things that you made simply because you and Natalie decided to sit down at a coffee bean and sit down for 4 hours, 10 plus, you know, years ago now. And so these decisions have paid off. We often learn from our mistakes. Is there anything that you would rather like, hey, let me give some advice to someone as they're starting down their journey of maybe entrepreneurship, being in this business, what are the things that they can learn from you so they don't have to make their own mistakes?
Well, yeah, everybody has to do it the hard way, myself included. I was given lots of great advice I ignored. You know, I think regarding the pricing, I wouldn't underprice what you're doing. Like, there will always be people above you in the list that are cheaper, right? But I think if you can allow yourself to deliver a much better experience for the customers you do have, that will pay many more dividends. I would say also to take it slow as you're trying to transition, be patient. Like, you know, you could sell an ebook, and then you could sell a plugin, and then you could do a SaaS, take on bigger and bigger problems and build up, and everything will take way longer than you think. And it's really easy to give up at any point along the way, because I think the hardest part is choosing to continue when it's not really clear, like, am I crazy? Is this a terrible idea? Have I just wasted my life? And usually that happens like right at the point where you do need to keep going. And the problem is you don't really know whether this is a failed project and you are wasting your time, or you're just in this like point right before it finally starts to compound and you get where you need to go. So I think there is no easy way to determine which one that is, but usually like you can take signals, right? Like I can take, like with our SaaS business, we've been building Blink Metrics for 3 years, and the first year and a half, like, you know, it was mostly just building, and we're just throwing time, like thousands of hours into this thing. But if you have some signal, like we have people paying for like high-end consulting versions of this, it's like if people are willing to spend a tremendous amount of money and effort to solve this problem, there will be people who will buy the solution when we finally get there. And so it's an art and a science, I guess, to try to figure out. And you don't know until afterwards, maybe, whether you're right or not.
Yeah. So if like a listener was stuck on a decision, small, big, whatever, right now, what's kind of your, and there's no maybe clear decision to make. There's no data to back up one way or another. What's your philosophy? What piece of advice would they need to hear right now?
Yeah. I mean, if it's a reversible decision, just try it. Like, right. Like if you're not sure if your price is too low, just double your price and try it for a month and see if it did fall through the floor. And if it is the same, then great. Like, you know, I think we really put a lot of mental weight on ourselves about making the right decision, but like a lot of decisions, like you can double your price. You asked earlier if we get pushback, and no, like nobody notices. Everybody's got a million things in their life, and somebody will show up to my site tomorrow. I could double the price right now, and I would get maybe one or two emails of somebody who had been like looking last week, who then say, like, why is your price so much more? And we say, oh, sorry about that. Here's a coupon. You know, we just raised it. But like most people don't care, and they're not paying attention to you that closely.
Okay.
So you can try a lot of things, and I would just try it, right? Because you can really talk yourself in circles in your head about like, should I do this? Is this better? But you could just try it and give yourself a window, like, oh, I'll try it for a week, or I'll try responding to the emails this way, or I'll try getting on Zoom calls with clients and not worry about whether that's sustainable long-term. And actually we'll find, oh, for some of these crazy clients who just wrote me 5 pages, you know, in an email thread, like I can just jump on a Zoom call with them for 15 minutes. It'll literally take me less time than it would take to reply to them and the 6 replies that would follow. And they'll be less frustrated, and I'll be less frustrated, and they'll be this like the strongest advocate ever. So you can try things that just seem like terrible ideas and find out that they're fine.
Yeah, I like that idea. Like, is this reversible? I think that's a good way to think about it. Like, am I screwed? Is it reversible?
And that the world doesn't revolve around me, and not everyone's going to notice.
They're not paying attention.
They're not.
No one's going. Yeah.
Okay.
This has been really helpful, Nathan. Thank you for kind of, as we were walking down, you know, this idea of making all these decisions. This has been on my mind, and I think you were the perfect guest to come in and help us really think about these decision-making opportunities. You've made a ton of decisions. They've turned out well. Not always. It's never been, I'm sure, like, it was all perfect, but like, we learn from each other, and that's been really helpful. As we're wrapping up, where can people find you if they want to learn more about the projects that you're working on and what you've done? How would someone get in touch with you?
Sure. So if you go to nsquared.io, so Nathan and Natalie is nsquared.
Yeah. So, yeah. There you go.
That's good.
EdTour.io has kind of links to all of the projects and products that we've worked on over the last 10 years. And blinkmetrics.com is the main one that I'm spending most of my time in. If that's interesting at all in growing your business and knowing where to focus your attention across all the different tools you use, there's a demo thing. You can book a demo with me and you can just look at your business and your data. And we don't even have to do a demo, but I love just talking about data and small businesses and helping small businesses grow, because it is so hard and there are so few tools for the little guys to have a leg up.
Good. Well, and thank you for this time. I think that's about all we're going to do for today on Do the Woo Biz Chat. So until next time, I am Adam Weeks from Cirrus Influence, and you are?
Emma? Oh, sorry.
It's your turn to say.
I'm still thinking about N squared. It's just like I have a jingle in my head. If you want a show tune to go with your... But no, I'm not N squared. I'm not that cool. I am Emma. That's it. And thank you, Nathan.
Newly, Emma got, yeah, she's now, what's her new title?
Oh, yeah, now I'm head of organic marketing at Hostinger. So if you have any organic marketing topics you want to discuss, SEO, YouTube localization, content, not SaaS product development, but now possibly pricing, since I'm an expert on that, you can talk to Nathan.
Emma is pesticide-free organic marketing. All right. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, Bob WP again. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our sponsor, GoDaddy. If you've yet to subscribe, you can find us on your favorite pod app on the Fediverse. And to get all things Do the Woo at dothewoo.io/subscribe. So until the next time, take care.